We would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the land in which we record this podcast today, the Arakwal people of the Bundjalung Nation, and pay our respects to elders past and present.
Hello, yummy mummies. Welcome to Beyond the Bump, a podcast brought to you by Jade Caldwell and Sophie Pierce. This podcast is targeted at mums, mums-to-be, and women in general. And gents, feel free to have a listen too. It's a place to have real discussions and ask real questions, no matter how hard, with honest and authentic people. The aim is to have you feeling lighter, more supported, and more understood after every listen. Now, we can't promise that it will always be kept PG, so please be mindful around little ears. Here we go.
Hello, Jade.
Hello, Sophie and all our bumpies listening. How are you this week?
I feel boring and unprepared, but goodbye. I feel boring in the nicest way. I think, you know, on last week's intro, I was saying we've kind of been here, there and everywhere and things have felt fun but frantic. And this weekend slash this past week, I have been embracing just the boredom and the mundane of day-to-day parenting, and it has been utter bliss and I've loved it. I had a weekend where I can't even really tell you what I did, but I was a bit bored and a bit relaxed. And
good,
it was lovely.
Okay, shut up,
okay,
Sophie.
Now I'm going to shut
boring.
Up because
we don't
you
want to hear
are
it.
The opposite. So
yeah, that's it. We don't want to hear that. But I'm very, very proud and happy that you had a carefree weekend.
But don't you think it's funny that once you become a parent, like being a bit bored is often a good sign?
Because being bored is my favourite feeling of all. Because usually I pick up a book and then I'm like, oh my God, I feel so rested.
Yeah. So tell us about you who is not bored. You have not had a spare minute, second, fibre to be bored.
Can I share my rude or fabulous first though? Okay. So I was on a walk this morning and I was doing a lot of business stuff head in my phone.
Oh, you are very important.
Yeah. Well,
did you have an AirPod?
You weren't doing it. You weren't doing it. So I had to do it. So I was doing it. Anyway, long story short, walking along and I see this guy and he is taking a photo. Now, you know, when people say, you know, you get what you put out in the universe, like if you start thinking things, I know I read a lot of spicy romance novels and I talk a lot about.
Did you see Daddy Kate?
Silly. Well,
anyone who's read Chestnut Springs will know about Daddy Kate. Oh, show me him.
Okay.
This will cure my boredom.
I don't think it. Well, yes, this guy had his shirt off and yes, he was ripped. He looked sensational. And he was getting his photo taken by his, I'm going to say, girlfriend. And as I looked lower, he was showing something else.
Oh, my God. Why does he have a nut out?
He's got his nut out. He was getting a photo with his nut out.
That gives me the ick. What is he doing? There's children behind him.
So the thing is, I think there's a thing out there where guys like to do a little sneaky nut photo where they put a nut out. I remember Harry did it one time and I'm like, what are you doing? Like if they're at a really like iconic event, I think it was at the Eiffel Tower, Harry might have done a little nut thing. But anyway, long story short, I showed this to Harry. I sent a photo and went, okay, and he goes, for fuck's sake. So maybe it wasn't. I'm not sure. Is that rude or is
that
fabulous?
That is definitely rude. You cannot be slinging a nut out in public.
Yeah.
Imagine if that was you and your vulva.
Well, to be honest, he's got a good ball on him.
Oh, I've got. There's no such thing as a good ball. Those things were designed.
I beg to differ.
No, those things need to go back to.
It's got a good body too.
He does, but it's given me the ick that he's in public with a ball out. Balls in general, scrotums in general, need to go back to like the redesign phase. They're just why are they so wrinkly and saggy?
Speaking of balls, I recently found. I was watching a YouTube on how tennis balls are made. I thought that was interesting.
That does not sound interesting to me.
It's a fucking effort just for a tennis ball. And then my dog chews it.
Shit's happening in your life when you're trying to escape by finding out how tennis balls are made. Okay. Now stop skirting around the subject and how are we going?
I'm a bit rattled. I've got a lot going on. And no, I didn't want any of this to happen. It's just all just come on top. And this is what happens in life. When it rains, it pours. And I'm used to it. I've been pretty cruisy.
I feel like you've been in a really good state. Mm. Everyone everyone's been somewhat, well, not under control, but like manageable.
Yeah, everyone's been cruising and then daddy goes to a Bucks and it's all over. I got a cow twisted in wire, cow's out on the road. We've got to get that sorted. He had a really good time for two nights away, which bless him, he can barely leave this property without something fucking up. So I tried my best not to message him. I let him have a good time. But in that this weekend, I was solo parenting and Billy has a lump and it's really sore. And when we get off this intro, I'm actually going to get her and taking her to hospital because we've worked out that it might be more serious than what I'm thinking it was. So I'll keep you posted with that one. I also want to say parenting in general is absolutely exhausting. And just when you think you've got, you know, the swing of a certain age of like a 5-year-old or a 2-month-old or a 3-year-old, you don't. It's like we'll say, and we say it all the time, it's developmental, but I really think that like Yumi's turning 5 and I really love 5, mm. 5 special. Then I've got a 12, almost 11-year-old and I'm grounding her.
Basically like, the tweens are kicking your ass.
The tweens, I feel like I looked at Harry last night because we had to have a parent-to-parent meeting. He was hungover. It wasn't ideal, but anyway. And we looked at each other and it was the first time I looked back at my childhood and looked at my parents like, oh, you know, when you get in trouble and you're like, parents are assholes, they're dickheads. They don't know anything.
You don't know anything. You're so old.
Yeah. I feel like I am now like that. I'm a proper parent. I'm not like this. I don't just have a baby and you dress it and you walk around. Not saying that's what
Oh, my God, please. Excuse me. This bitch has been out of babyhood far too long.
Yeah. You know, they just sleep all day. Sleep when the baby sleeps.
Okay, for all the mums out there with babies, I will personally, on behalf of all of us, give her a once over once we're out of recording. But sure, keep saying what you're fucking saying.
If you want to feel better about it, you can listen to every other episode that I whinge and complain about having babies, because I definitely do. It is hard work. But right now I'm focusing on the other hard work, which is tweens. And I am scared. I don't know what I'm doing. And it is just another area that is completely overwhelming. So
I think it's different. I think they're different hards. And you know, we joke, like the hards. Baby things is like, it's nonstop. It's exhausting. It's physically demanding. You know, you don't get heaps back. It's just the complete, I don't know, it overtakes your whole life and is just so relentless. Whereas all of a sudden you're in this stage of parenting where the decisions you make aren't necessarily like affecting the right here, right now. Like they probably don't physically need you quite as much. But the things you're going through with tweens are like, that's setting them up for the future. That's like their safety. That is like, it feels really, really big. Like when you've told me the things, I'm like, wow, I can't believe I'm going to be there soon.
This is like, for me, the situations are having to sit back and have a really long think about how you're going to move forward with a certain situation, a certain discussion, because where I feel we're at is that we're essentially molding and trying to do our best at guiding our child to becoming a really good adult and a good human being. Mm. And you want to do the best and you kind of sit back and you learn from your own mistakes as a child and what you thought was right and wrong as a parent. But yeah, I'm really lost for words. It's a lot. It is a lot. And it's a lot when you're on your own and you've got 3 different ages and they're all fighting for completely different reasons. Mm. And then you've got 1 sick child. I had something else happen that I was just like, what the fuck? It's just been all at once. But yeah, that's all. There's nothing else in my brain. There's a lot in my brain. In fact, there's so much going on right now that goodbye.
Anyway, should we get into today's episode? We spoke to Dr. Emma, and she is a food scientist. And to be honest, before this started, I was not quite sure what a food scientist was, but I love Dr. Emma.
She is not boring.
No, she is not boring at all. And we chatted all about food and kids and food and what kids in quotations should be eating. How do we get rid of the shame and guilt that can so often be attached with, you know, what our kids are eating or more importantly, what they're not eating. And she just gave so many incredible tips and tricks on how to have a more balanced diet for our kids, but to kind of take that pressure off mealtime.
We genuinely went in going, oh, you know, we'll have this chat and I'm sure it'll be amazing. But what we took away, Sophie and I, from the tips that she gave us, I was like, oh, I've got this newfound like urge to like change things up.
Yeah.
And I also felt less mum guilt after this episode because how she explained what we do at the early stages with our children with eating to what we will do when they're older was incredible.
I always know we've had a good episode when I go home and I'm like to Nick, okay, these are the things I want to change up, but not in a like a we were doing things wrong type way, but as a I'm feeling really inspired and excited. And that's how I felt after this episode.
Yeah, so we hope you enjoy. And I also want to say I got to meet some of our bumpies over the week. They just came out of the woodworks. I was at one cafe and I sat down at a table of lovely women and I said, who listens to Beyond the Bump? Two of them said yes. So I went around and there was eight of them. I went rude, fabulous, fabulous. That was a bit funny. And then I met another two ladies yesterday at the pub. And they said, we were umming and ahhing whether to come up and say hello and take a photo.
Always say hello.
And I said, you should know by now, we love the limelight. Yeah. Come and get a photo.
We're just downright attention seekers. Come and give us attention.
So if you see us, come and have a photo
and
or a
Jade,
chat.
I hope your week turns in a better direction.
Yeah.
And we'll touch base with you next week.
Goodbye.
Hello, Emma, and welcome to Beyond the Bump. Before we get started, can you please tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do, and I guess a bit about what we're going to be chatting about today?
So I am a food and nutrition scientist, and my role is to do research on healthy eating, so things like food choices and how foods interact with our bodies. But I'm also a food nutrition communicator, so part of my role is to share information about healthy eating and food choices. And my aim there is really not to be the food police. It's really about empowering people and helping people have the right information for them to make the best decisions that work with their life. So hopefully today that's what we can do together and we can talk about how some specific foods might fit into those healthy habits and healthy patterns.
I know I'm going to be absolutely starving by the end of this episode. And I just want to paint a picture. Emma is wearing a mushroom top. She's got mushroom earrings and fabulous glasses. It is just, yeah, you guys can't see, but we can. And it's absolutely
You're
fabulous.
An absolute delight to speak to. But I think this is such an important topic for parents. I think we so often go into parenthood with the best of intentions and with so many things. And then our kids come along and they have other ideas. And I feel like as parents, we can get so much, I guess, guilt and be so hard on ourselves about the way our kids are eating and think it's this thing that we should be controlling, but we can't control. And all of a sudden our kids are eating this beige diet and we don't know how we got here because when we started out, they were eating everything. And so I'm really excited to have this chat, maybe have some tips, but also lighten that guilt and that mental load of, you know, what our kids are eating and what we're doing. But first of all, I'm interested, how did you get into this? How do you become a food scientist?
For me, it was completely by accident. So I'm from a giant family. I have nine siblings, so one of 10 kids.
Wow.
And so I grew up looking at all these people who were kind of the same, but kind of different. And different people liked different foods and different people had different health things. And I trained as a biomedical scientist to start with. I was interested in the human body generally. And when I started thinking about all the different things my siblings and I ate and what certain people didn't eat, food kind of became this curiosity where the things that we do, it can impact everyone. We all eat every day, right? And so I realized that the things that make us the same and the things that make us different, a lot of those are centered around food. And so that became, I guess, my excitement for my career and my research. And I trained in food science and human nutrition then.
Awesome. I feel like there's this added layer of pressure for parents nowadays, because not only do we want our kids eating healthy, but there's this contentious issue of, oh, but we don't want to then guilt them about foods that are quote unquote not healthy. And whenever my daughter says anything about a food being healthy, I then get this, oh shit, is she meant to think foods are healthy and not healthy? Where do we sit on this? Like, how much should we be worrying about these things? Because one part of me is like, oh, that's great that she's liking that healthy food. And then the other part of me is going, oh, she shouldn't even know what healthy and not healthy is. She should just be enjoying food.
It's tricky. So I think the best way to look at it is we want to stop putting things in extremes, because we look at it and go, this is perfect and this is imperfect. And really the choices we make in a day, whether it's food or anything else, they fit along a spectrum. And it's about where can we make changes to move ourselves along the spectrum. But that needs to be considered with all the other spectrums of stress and joy and money and time. And so how do we kind of combine all those things to make the best decision in the context is really what I want people to think about, not binary boxes. Like before, when you said, oh, suddenly we realize we're eating a really beige diet, and my brain, hey, there's some really great beige foods, like mushrooms are beige. And we end up putting these kind of binary good, bad, you know, descriptors. And we forget that when we do that, it then has these unintended consequences of sliding into, okay, well, that's bad. Like people think potatoes are bad because they're white. And, you know, it just doesn't make any sense to contain ourselves within these binary boxes when food is actually so complex and so is our lives.
And should we be kind of zooming out and looking at it as a whole picture? Like, we travel a fair bit with our kids, and sometimes when you're out and about or in different places, you know, like they might be literally having chips as a meal, or they might be, you know, we're in Japan and sometimes, you know, they couldn't find something they like, so they would just have rice for an entire meal. Is that okay? Because when you zoom out and look at, you know, what they eat, in the norm, it's a lot more varied than that? Or should we be trying to make each meal balanced?
So as a goal, you want to try to make each meal balanced, of course, because that would be great. That's a really good point to be at. But it's also not always possible. And so we need to think about the holistic view of eating in the context of a life. And so, like, when you think about where we've gone with perfection and diet culture from when we were kids, and the impact that had on us and our food choices and now our relationship with foods, it'd be great if in the future, and if this could be like the future trend of how we're going to look at eating with kids, let's think about the bigger picture. And instead of those simple rules, let's talk about context with them and say, you know, today we are having rice, not what we're going to have for dinner every day, but today we're having rice because we're out and about and we're having fun, or that's the only food that we like that's available, or maybe it's the only food that we can afford that's available. And, you know, really, you know, not stressing kids out with those kinds of decisions, but letting them know you're making those choices contextually, not on this absolute scale of perfection.
So let's bring it back to basics. What is a balanced meal? What does one balanced meal look like?
So balance is really tricky, because balance isn't just about the meal. So balance is about two things. It's about getting all of the nutrients onto the plate, but it's also about balancing the other aspects of eating. So balancing the stress and balancing the cost and balancing the time. Mm-hmm. So balance is the opposite of diet culture. Diet culture is where it's the most important thing that we eat righteously and that we eat in a way that's going to make our bodies look a particular way. Balance is about going, let's put all these different things together and make a decision that works for me. So one of the easiest ways to get balance is to put all your colors on a plate. Because each color of fruits and vegetables and foods generally will have a different set of nutrients and a different set of bioactives that are linked to them. So if you can go the rainbow spectrum and go from your beige and white mushrooms to your red tomatoes to your green apples and orange carrots and yellow melons and citrus, if you can spread across that spectrum, wait, I've missed the color, your purple berries, then you know you're spreading out the joy and you're spreading out the risk and you're spreading out the inputs as well. And that's a really easy way, particularly with kids, to go, is this plate balanced? Are we missing a color? And then you can go and find a food that fits that gap.
See, I feel like when I think of a rainbow style of meal, I'll go burritos or a stir fry. However, I will make that meal and the girls will have the wrap, the chicken, the avocado and cheese. And that's as far as they go. So it's like they selectively will pull out what they feel. And I know we talk about bland colors, but they are pulling out the bland colors. That's what they want to eat. They're eating those foods.
Can I tell you a scientific secret about kids and taste and how they choose their food?
Absolutely.
Yes.
So we have our five basic tastes, and one of those is bitter. And bitterness has evolved as a taste to protect us from poison, because typically in nature, things that are in plants that are bitter are poisonous. It's a quirk of nature that those are also the things that are good for us in plants, the bioactive compounds. And if you've ever like smelt a multivitamin or taste.
Well, that sounds like a royal fuck up, doesn't it?
Evolution was not planned. So, but yeah, like our vitamins themselves don't taste good. And, you know, if you've ever licked a multivitamin, you'll know it's not super tasty. And so our bodies are protecting us when they tell us certain things don't taste good. And with kids, those aversive tastes are super dialed up. So when they act like some vegetables taste like poison to them, they are not exaggerating. Their body is going, you're little and you could put anything in your mouth. I better be careful and make sure this isn't a poison. But over time, if we try those foods, our brains learn they're not poisons. And so having your options for foods and going, okay, I've made a meal that the kids can assemble the bits they want, is a really great way of making sure that everyone gets a meal that they want to eat. But you can also use that to go, okay, you've picked these things. You've avoided the green leafy vegetables and you've avoided the mushrooms or whatever it else the kids aren't choosing. And you can say, we've eaten our meal. Now let's taste these. And if you make that fun and not torturous in their brain, over time, that repeat exposure is going to help them realize that those are not poisons and that they can enjoy them.
Oh my gosh.
And so
how do you make
it fun though? Because my kids would just say, no, I'm not trying it.
Well, I mean, there's ways you can make it fun in terms of making it a game. You can, you know, do silly little things like, I'm going to take this and put it on my tongue and, oh, yuck. Okay, you try too. Because kids do like doing weird things. Like we all like to eat sour warheads when I was a kid, and those are definitely not tasty. And so making it a challenge or, you know, making it a fun kind of game.
But no forcing. Like if they flat out say no and they're not into the game, then you just try the game another time.
Exactly. Because we have plenty of time. Bodies are robust. Human bodies, even little ones, are robust. And if we don't eat the particular vegetable we want them to on the particular day, that's okay. The world is not going to fall apart. This is the long game because we're setting them up for healthy eating in adulthood. We're not just setting them up for healthy eating today.
That takes a lot of pressure off just hearing that, because I think that when you're at a table with your kids,
you're just like, how are they?
You do feel quite stressed and overwhelmed.
The human body is very complex and its favorite thing to do is keep things normal. And so it's working all the time to keep things normal. So yes, there's basic things we need to get in every day, but we don't necessarily need to get anything at all the time. The other thing you can do with these kind of like no thank you bites is balance your hidden veggies with your just try it veggies. And so we can do sneaky yet cool things like puree our carrots and hide them in the bolognese, or grate up our zucchini, or mince up our mushrooms and blend it with our mince. The kids don't see those veggies then, but they eat them, and that's great. But that's not helping us make the loop in the brain. So mince up the mushies, add them to the mince and the bolognese, but then afterwards, just try a mushroom, because then you start building that taste training as well as sneaking the nutrients in, and they don't know that it's happening.
But then when you've done that, can you sit there and go, guess what? That mushroom that you don't like is actually in the dinner that you do like. So like, do you start connecting it that way, or just literally slowly, did you like it? Didn't you like it? What did you find? And then you move on to the next day, next meal.
You don't want to play the guess what you just ate card too early, because then that can create a distrust and aversion later. And so once they've warmed up to the food, then you start saying, oh, how about we chop some up small and put it in? And they'll see then that it's not actually making a difference to their food.
And you've spoken about eating the rainbow and about a balanced meal. I think we can all agree that ingredients and groceries and everything are so expensive right now. And I think sometimes the thought of having that much variety in a meal is a bit like, geez, how many ingredients do I have to buy? Are things like chopped up frozen veg fine? Like, you know, rather than buying all of those veg fresh, individual, is that a good way to be able to add multiple things into a meal without having a whole bunch of veggies wilting in your fridge?
Yeah. So using our frozen veg and frozen fruit is just as good nutritiously as our fresh is, because when it's frozen, it's snap frozen at the point of harvesting, basically. And so it can actually have more nutrients retained because freezing's a preservation method. So using frozen is a great way to do it. For me, I like to think of adding variety, not as adding cost, but bulking out the more expensive stuff, because you can choose cheaper fruits and vegetables. You can add, as we said, add your mushrooms, add your carrots, add your zucchini, everything you can chop up and bulk out those more expensive meats is great.
Yeah.
And then having things that can be used in other meals. So for example, we do put out our salad ingredients all on separate plates so that each kid in the family can choose the different things that they do and don't like, build their own salad, but then make sure you serve that in a way so that what's left can go back in the fridge and maybe become the next stir fry ingredient.
Yeah.
And so reusing things in that way is a really good way to kind of bring down that cost and bring down that stress.
Why do some kids like certain foods and other kids don't? Like if I have three kids and I'm feeding them all.
If I have three kids.
I do have three kids. Wow, Jade.
Hypothetically, if I would have had three girls of the ages on.
So I have three daughters and one of them eats healthier than myself and my husband. She actually craves fruit and veg. And the middle child is beige, just doesn't like anything touching. And then I've got the younger child that is kind of like, whatever. How come I have, like, is it something I did with the first child that I'm like, oh, I've missed the boat on the second and third? Or is it just playing down to personal preference or personality?
Yeah, I'm going to let you in on another scientific secret. So I'm an identical twin. I have a literal genetic clone. And so we are the same human biologically, but we are not the same human in reality. And we don't like all the same foods. And so part of why we all like different foods is our different sense of taste. So we all, just like some of your kids might have different heights and hair colors and eye colors, even though they both came from the same parents, they have different sets of taste receptors and that changes how they interact with food. But they also have different experiences with food. And even if we think we gave each kid the same experience, different things connect in our brains to change our behaviors. So like I have a brother who will not eat chicken noodle soup anymore because he had it once when he was sick.
Yeah, yeah.
And now in his brain, that's what made him sick. And, you know, for the adults, think about your nemesis alcohol that you drank too much of once and you're thinking about it now and you're feeling a little bit sick.
Mm-hmm.
And
Jägermeister. Yeah.
Everyone's got one, right? And so all those experiences add up about our food. So for me and my twin sister, one of our big differences is I love tomatoes. I would love to have tomatoes on a piece of bread with just some salt. That's the perfect meal for me.
Oh,
she cannot stand the thought of tomatoes. And so something's obviously happened in an interaction with a tomato dish growing up that has given her that difference, because we have the same taste buds. And so instead of stressing about, I mean, why are we different? How can we make us all the same? Let's lean into embracing those differences and remember that there's different ways that we can prepare the same foods. And get the same nutrients, but have very different experiences.
I think even more so, it's not even child to child. It's the same child day to day. Like they'll annihilate a meal one night and then you put it in front of them the next week thinking, oh, this is an easy go-to thing that I know that it's going to eat. And they look at it like you have put something poisonous in front of them. What do you do then?
But do you not have those days as well where you, yes. you look at something that you normally love and go, oh, I'm just not feeling that today. So why do we expect kids to be able to regulate
it's annoying.
Their appetite?
I feel like with mushrooms and certain veggies, it's like you feel like an adult when you start liking certain foods. Like I remember I hated avocado and I wasn't a big fan of mushrooms, but I was told by my family, if you eat that, like if you eat green beans, it'll clean your blood. If you eat the carrot, your eyes will be good. And, you know, all these tricks. And that was actually a game that we played. And I liked eating it knowing that I was actually helping my body. I don't know if it was true, but I went with it. And as an adult, when I became interested in mushroom style meals and avocado style meals, I'm like, oh, I've grown up.
I'm so mature.
Or has my taste buds grown up?
Your taste buds probably have grown up. And that is one of the mistakes we make with kids is we tell them they're not going to like things. And then they will believe that they're not going to like them for forever. And so if they don't like them, if you give them a taste, you can say, you don't like it now, but you might like it tomorrow. You might like it next week. You might like it when you're five. And that way you're leaving the door open for them to go on that journey and giving them those different ways of preparing them. Because I think one of the things that, you know, going back to the mushroom example is, you know, we say, oh, kids don't like them because of the texture. But there's lots of textural ways you can create a tasty mushroom dish. And so trying out those textures as well as those flavors with kids so that they can go on that flavor journey is really important.
And what happens, because I feel like each time my kids as babies have eaten literally everything I've put in front of them and I've thought very smugly, oh my gosh, I have these kids that will eat anything. Like they're even fine with like a little bit of spice and it being sour and all of this. And then each time they've all got to, I reckon, 2.5. And all of a sudden, if you served them butter or cheese on pasta every meal of every day, they'd be happy. What happens in that time? Is it that they suddenly can express what they want, or does something actually change with their taste buds?
So we have different stages of growth and development, and there's a really cute experiment you can do with little kids where you give them the slice of lemon, and because you've handed them food, they'll put it in their mouth and then they'll go, oh, that's not very tasty, and they'll put the lemon down. And then they'll pick the lemon back up and they'll put it in their mouth again. And they will do this loop over and over because they haven't started consciously computing these choices and these consequences and actions together yet. And then we'll get into some phases where, because of growth and development, where we're looking for different things and we're interested in different things. And our brains just might be distracted doing, you know, so many of the other functions that they need to do in growth and development. And
that is true.
Again, toddlers. That's okay.
So what are your quick nutrition tips that you think every parent should know for keeping their kids healthy? Like we've said, they're robust, you know, they can get through not eating that much, but what are the things that we should really focus on and how can we actually get those things into them?
All right. So I want to be really clear that the quick nutrition tips come with the caveat that what works for one family, one kid, one parent is not necessarily going to work for everyone. So when you hear someone go, these are my top tips, if that top tip doesn't work for you, it's not because there's something wrong with you. It's because that tip just does not work in your context. And that is fine. So I want to say that first.
Yes. Yes. Disclaimer.
And then I think it's going back to what we said earlier about we need to remember that we're not just feeding kids for today. We're feeding kids to set up their relationship with food. And so we don't want to make eating traumatic and stressful. And we do want kids to be nourished now, but we want them to be adventurous later, because food adventurousness, willingness to try new foods, that is linked to diet quality later in life. So the more adventurous we are, the better we eat overall. And so encouraging that in any way possible is the best thing you can do long term. So going back to what we said about hiding some vegetables, your pureed carrots, your grated zucchini, all of those things, hide those for the nourishment today, but have the fun with playing with foods and tasting foods for the eating tomorrow.
I love that.
The immediate tip though, because that's my kind of like long-term tip, which is not really quick. Sorry, I took some liberty with that answer. My number one tip for quick is to, as you said, embrace the frozen. And whether that is buying frozen and using those frozen fruits and veg to bulk up a meal and give options, or whether that is cooking in bulk and popping things in the freezer, or buying fresh, using what you can, then popping that in the freezer. Because freezing just means if you're prepared in advance, and I know batch cooking and prep cooking doesn't work for all people, but if you're prepared in advance, it means you don't have to make as many decisions when life is chaotic. So make the decisions when you have the space in your brain. Put those things aside. And then when the brain is full, when the kids are being rascals, you can pull out the good decisions you made earlier. So make it easy for future you in terms of both adventurousness and practicality.
Love it. And you mentioned before one tip for tweaking the meal for everyone's wants, needs, desires, personalities is kind of serving themselves. Do you have any other tweaks? Because, you know, the last thing we want to be doing as parents is cooking up three different meals for three different kids and then a different meal for us. What are other ways that, you know, everyone can be happy and everyone can be eating?
So obviously being one of 10 kids, we had this challenge a lot with all those different food preferences around the table.
That would have been a big table. Did you all sit down together at the same time?
Yes, we did. It did get so big at one stage that we didn't have individual chairs. We kind of had like park bench pews down the sides of the tables. Yeah. But
they're all the trend, actually. I have one of them at home and we've only got three kids.
Yeah.
I think the funny thing is like your parent or parents would have been doing batch cooking, but that would have literally been for one meal. Like, you know, you get out the big pot and pan and it's like, where did it all go?
Yeah, I do struggle now with actually cooking for a small household. I'm used to, I will cut the whole bag of carrots and sometimes I have to consciously say I actually only need the one carrot. So yeah, that is tricky. That's an adjustment. But I think extending the serve yourself to involving people in the options and serving yourself, you know, it might be whether that's just picking the veggies, like putting a bunch of veggies on the table and people pick the ones they want, but it can also be adding your own sauces and adding your own level of spice and, you know, having, you know, even things like having the hard and soft taco options is a great way to do things. And so, you know, having those options for sauces is really powerful. And sauces are another good tip that I would love to give parents, because we're a bit scared of sauces because we see people on the internet say, there's as much sugar in a bottle of tomato sauce as there is in a bottle of Coke. You shouldn't be using tomato sauce, which would be a great point if I was drinking tomato sauce as a beverage.
So we're not encouraging that. Is that right?
Definitely tomato sauce is not my beverage of choice for nutrition. No, but if it floats your boat, hey, who am I to stop you?
You do you.
But we're using little bits of sauce, and the little bits of sauce, yes, they do have sugar and yes, they do have salt. But that's what makes food taste good. And so if it takes a little bit of sauce of the kid's choice, even if it seems weird, to make that vegetable or that chicken or that mushroom or whatever else tastes good, that's okay. Because literally what those sauces are doing is blocking those bitter taste receptors. And that's part of our conditioning, knowing that we can eat those foods just fine. So instead of telling them they've had too much sauce, ask them what sauce they want to add to each of those foods to make them tasty. That can be one of your games.
That's so funny, because I've never thought about how ridiculous that comparison is, because when you're drinking a thing of Coke, you're just drinking the Coke. You're not having it on something to then eat something that's got more nutritional value. That's just, it's like it's the stupidest comparison when you put it like that.
You've summed it up perfectly.
I love that about the taste bud information, because my mum would make like a lasagna or she'd make a meal and then we'll go, yeah, where's the tomato sauce? And she'll go, don't wreck my meal putting tomato sauce on top of what I've just made, because I've balanced it right with the salts and the herbs and you don't need, you know, like.
But I guess she's balanced it for her taste buds, not for the child. Yeah.
And your kids are not your restaurant reviewers, guys. Like, it doesn't matter if they're insulting your flavor palette. The best vegetables are the ones that they eat. So help them do that in the way that works for them.
And I do want to say, I agree with you on if you can, and depending on what age, letting them serve themselves. Because I find when I put a bowl of stir fry or whatever meal it is in front of my middle child, she looks at it and immediately gets overwhelmed. And if she has a choice of putting whatever it is on her plate to suit her needs, she's much more inclined to eat it.
Yep. And so some of us get flavor fatigue. You make a bowl food where it's all mixed up together. Each bite tastes the same. You're not going to eat as much because your mouth just literally gets, it's called sensory specific satiety is the scientific word. It's where your mouth gets tired of eating the same food over and over again and no longer feels hungry. And for some of us, that hits harder. And so for me, bowl food doesn't work. Everything being mixed together doesn't work. I need to have those flavors separated. If I'm eating a hamburger, I'm going to eat top down. I'm going to eat the bun first and then the lettuce and then meat and the mushrooms and then the cheese. Just that works better in my mouth. But this also makes me think of my other top tip is don't stress about it looking like an actual meal. MasterChef has made us think that every single meal needs an actual name, like tonight I'm serving blah, blah, blah.
I think so much as parents, we want to serve this meal. And I was going to say, like, if we served, I don't know, chicken on top of rice with the veggies all together, my kids would look at that and go, ooh. But if I gave them a plate that had a bit of chicken, a bit of rice, and then the veggies on the side, they might turn their nose up still at the veggies. But I think when they can see it all separate, it's way less confronting for them because they're just like, oh, I know I like rice and I know I like chicken.
And so much less stress for you as well, because there was this trend a couple of years ago, TikTok girl dinner. And girl dinner was just assembling a bunch of stuff you had that you might want to eat and it wasn't really a meal. And I looked at that and I was like, that's not girl dinner, that's kid dinner. That's how I was.
Yeah.
I was little. I wanted my crackers and my dried apricots and my cup of frozen peas, not even cooked. And
yeah.
So making that easier for you and easier for them and not putting that social pressure on. I had all these foods growing up that, like, we didn't even have names for them. They weren't dishes. They were just food. And I didn't realize until later in life that a lot of people do feel that pressure to kind of name and make a particular thing the same way every time. And I don't know, I just think that's a lot of pressure for not much gain.
So if you do know there are some veggies and fruits that your kid does like at the current time or day or week,
wherever they're at, yeah,
would you say, okay, we'll make a meal, whatever the dinner meal is, and then I'll just be mindful of putting that there because I know that they're going to eat it and that's a plus, and then we can play and, you know, do the game with the new food or whatever food it is on top of that, but at least I know they're always going to go to that.
Yeah, combining your safe options with your adventurous options is really, really good advice.
So do you have any tips or tricks for really picky eaters at mealtime?
I think for really picky eaters, the idea is that A, you don't want to make it traumatic. B, you want to use those tools that you have available, like the sauces and the butter and the cream and the salt and the bread and all the other things that, as you said before, facilitate healthy eating that you're adding. They're not necessarily nutritious on their own, but they're adding in those foods. And remembering that with picky eaters, it's not about getting them to break on one hero food or one particular food. It's about helping them learn to embrace the variety, because variety is really key. And so giving them more than one option to try so that it does feel safe is definitely a good strategy to use, but definitely not making it traumatic, not making it adversarial, and working with them to find what works for them is part of the journey. And also remembering, like you said before, it's going to change. So your fussiest of eaters don't always stay your fussiest of eaters. But if you are really stressed about this, this is where professionals help. And people think that going to see a dietitian is only for sick people, but a dietitian can help you with these kinds of questions, and they can help you rather than just give general advice like I can today. They can sit with you and your child, and they can look at your kitchen and your life and the things that actually will work for you and the tools that you can put into play. So don't stress too much about it if you can manage that, but if you are really stressing, do reach out for that professional help.
A lot of people listening, you know, it's the start of the school year, might have only just started giving their kids lunch boxes now. You know, maybe their little one has just started school for the first time or preschool or whatever. Do you have any tips for lunch boxes? Because they can be the bane of a lot of people's existence. And is it more important to just have fuel in there for the day, or are we trying to get healthy stuff in there? And will they even eat it in that busy, chaotic time?
So lunch boxes are a massive source of stress for so many people.
Yes.
And one of the things I want you to remember about trying to assemble a healthy lunchbox is food isn't healthy if it doesn't get eaten. And so once again, we do need to look at balance, because we don't want healthy waste because that's not nourishing anyone. And so we do need to look at that balance about how they will eat, what they will eat, what's going to work for them. And so whether, you know, we're not going to send really complex meals in lunch boxes, even if you do want to impress the internet that way, but really focusing on what's practical for the circumstances under which they're going to be eating their lunch. Because I think lunch boxes have gotten way overhyped, and people are looking at lunch boxes in this isolated context and going, oh, can you believe this is in a lunchbox? But that lunchbox is one meal, and it's often one food in that one meal in the context of an entire day, an entire week, an entire year. Mm. And so don't try and make your lunchboxes perfect. Try and balance practical with nutritious.
So last night, my daughter, 4 years old, sits on the couch and my husband walks in. He goes, oh, on the review, it says that you didn't eat your lunch. And she goes, the teachers told me that if I didn't eat my lunch, that I would get sick. And I didn't eat my lunch and I am not sick. And I went, well, she's got you there.
That's a little scientist in the making. She did her own little experiment.
She was like, I'm going to do this experiment myself, you bloody liars. Speaking of getting sick though, are there foods that can help our kids boost their immunity and not be sick all the bloody time?
Yes, but the answer is probably not what you think it is. So when we think about eating foods for immunity, we typically think about vitamin C and we think about citrus. But really, eating for immunity is super multifaceted, and it's about supporting our bodies overall, because we can't build immune responses to things if we don't have all of the nutrients. And so it's more than just vitamin C. It's about having our energy, having enough energy to run the immune system. It's about having proteins and fats to be the building blocks of the things we need to build to run the immune system. And it's about having enough of the diversity of nutrients. And so that's looking at things like our B vitamins, our folate, our niacin, our pantothenic acid, selenium.
What's that?
Vitamin D. They're all just nutrients. You know, we don't need to know what these are. We need to know where to get them. And we get them from a variety of foods. And so instead of going citrus for vitamin C and, you know, carrots for vitamin A, let's look at our holistic way that we can eat things, because you can get a lot of those from a pumpkin. And, you know, so looking at the holistic way we can eat a variety of nutrients is the best advice for immunity. And that it's not just about nutrients. And I can't believe I haven't even talked about this yet, because I love this. Food isn't just about nutrients, it's about bioactive compounds. And bioactive compounds are the things that are in natural foods, so our plant foods, our fungi foods, and our animal foods like our milk and our meats. All of those naturally produce other things. They're not just an assembly of nutrients, they're also bioactive compounds. And bioactive compounds are naturally occurring compounds that promote health. So they're not essential. It's not like nutrients where if you don't have them, a deficiency disease could occur or you could start to die. But having them helps promote health. And each of our different vegetables and fruits and our fungi, each of those have their own set of bioactive compounds. And so things like ergothionine that's in mushrooms, that helps with immunity. And things like antioxidants that are in all of our plant foods, they help with immunity. And our fiber that's in our plant foods and in our mushrooms, stimulates our gut bacteria that produces things that's good for immunity. So immunity is like super complicated. It's not just looking for one silver bullet food or nutrient. It's about incorporating all of those things, that diversity across all of those natural food kingdoms.
I am so hungry.
I'm starving. I'm salivating. And your shirt's not helping either. I'm just looking at your mushrooms going, gosh, I'd love a beef stroganoff.
What do we think the next big thing in kids' nutrition we should be looking out for? I feel like every new week there's a new superfood or there's a new way we should be eating or feeding our kids. What's next?
I'm going to answer this question in two ways. What's probably next is someone trying to sell you a packet of something or a pill of something that's the magic thing that's going to mean you don't need to worry about feeding your kids well anymore. That's probably what's coming next. What I would like to come next is a more holistic approach to nutrition. So not just thinking about nutrition for today, but thinking about nutrition for tomorrow, but also thinking about that in the context of life, society, and the world. So when you look at, you know, teenagers these days and how they're all about climate action, and, you know, they see that they're going to grow up in a world that's going to be impacted by climate change in a way that we are not going to be here to see. And then when you think about the younger kids and how much they're going to need to think about growing and producing foods that nourish them in a way that is sympathetic to the environment and works in the environment as it exists today. So I hope that is the future trend for kids and food, but I do worry that it will be probably someone selling something.
There's always something.
Because that was last week, somewhere. That was this week, and that will be next week. Now, before we leave you, are there any last, you know, words of wisdom, tips or tricks or advice that you would like to leave us with?
Yeah, so I think building on what I said about the sustainability, and kids are going to need to think about sustainability, I think talking to them about how different foods grow is a really good way to help them connect with foods, because not every kid grows up on a farm. Growing up, we had, you know, rows of fruit trees and we grew all of our own vegetables, and Dad literally built a second garden shed so that he could have his own boxes of mushrooms growing out there.
Wow.
So I got to see how all these things grew, and not every kid gets to do that. No. And so creating those connections where you can, so you can show them what needs lots of inputs, what needs lots of land, and, you know, what can be grown in a box in a kitchen cupboard or a little garden shed out the back, I think is a really good way of helping them connect with food and the inputs for food. And so things like little kitchen experiments where you can go, okay, you can get like a mushroom growing kit at Bunnings and you can grow that with the kids, and you can take measurements and you can say, oh, how much bigger is that than yesterday? And what might we do with that for food? And, you know, that really starts connecting them with where it comes from. Not everyone's going to want to grow their own vegetables for forever, but going through that experience helps them see the uniqueness of different foods and the origins of those foods. So doing those experiments is really fun. And it's a jumping off point as they get older to then start talking about the more complicated things like, did you know that this actually grows, you know, using upcycled products to feed it? And did you know that this, you know, grows indoors so it doesn't need to worry about the weather and the land? Or, you know, did you know that if you pick this fruit off this tree before it's ripe, it's never going to ripen? But some of our fruits, like our tomatoes, we can put on the shelf in the kitchen. And you can, like, each of those build on those journeys with your kids. And, you know, they don't need to understand and know everything immediately, but you can walk that journey with them as they grow up and keep it fun and, you know, keep it interesting and engaging, and not fall into that trap that a lot of our parents did in terms of thinking teaching kids to eat is about being the food police, because that didn't work for us.
Yeah, that's so true.
Food is only good and bad. There's no gray area. There's no eating.
You are your
own boss. Love of eating.
Food is fun. It's complicated. It's science. And that's really cool. And we shouldn't be afraid of it.
Absolutely. We live on a farm. And yesterday my husband said, let's take Yumi around for a walk, because we have a lot of fruit trees and things everywhere. And anyway, we were walking down and I was picking up some limes and some grapefruit here and there. And Yumi turns around and she goes, oh, Mum, Do potatoes grow on trees? And I laughed my head off because I just had the visual of potatoes hanging from trees. And then I thought, how would you ever know if you don't see it or we don't talk about it? And so then we really got down this pathway of what fruit grows here and what veggies grow there. And then we really got into it and we're like, let's get those two girls off the iPad and bring them down here. So actually this afternoon, we're all going on a walk and we're all going to have this discussion about where things are from. And I do think it's really, really important that we do get a sense of our veggies and our fruits.
And I think the more involvement, the more they try things. Like my girls were petrified of green, leafy, anything. And then we put a small veggie patch thing out the back of our house and grew some lettuce. Mm. And because they'd seen it grow, they tried it. And now even if we buy lettuce from the supermarket, they will eat it. But it just needed that kind of like
connection.
Yeah, that connection and that, you know, bringing down of that intimidation a little bit. And, you know, we grew a tomato and they tried it. They didn't like it, but they'd never tried. They refused to have ever tried like a raw tomato before. And I do think, I mean, even if it, you know, even if you can't grow something, but it's just involving them of cooking, in cooking when you have the time or the patience, any aspect of food that you can get them involved in, I think is positive.
Absolutely. I love that. And for me, my number one fruits and vegetables now are the ones that I have connections with from when I was a kid. Mm. Like thinking about dad bringing in the mushrooms from the shed and thinking about mum making her pickled cucumbers and radishes. I love radishes because I grew them at school. Like that was one of our little, you know, kitchen garden experiments at school. And I'd never even seen a radish before. Mm. And they're just such a joyful vegetable for me now. So the more connections we can give kids to those foods while they're growing, the more likely they are to remember them, eat them, enjoy them later.
Love it.
I love it. Thank you so, so much for joining us today. It has been an absolute pleasure. I feel like you've really taken the pressure off. It can be just an area of parenthood that feels all consuming and like you can just never get it right. But I love the idea of like, you know, the little steps now and that we're building them up for the future and they truly are robust and food should be fun. And food is even so much more than the nutrients it brings. It's, you know, a way to connect. It's a way to... Yeah, I mean, I love food.
Seriously,
food's
Emma,
my number one hobby.
Seriously, Emma, we're starving and we've got to go. So
I could not have said that better myself. That is a really beautiful summary of how we do want kids to link with their foods. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Beyond the Bump. If you enjoyed it, please subscribe and give us a review. If you didn't, good on you.
You can also follow us on Instagram at beyondthebump.podcast to stay up to date on behind the scenes and future episodes. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.